ISIS claims to have killed a captive. A slowdown in the Ebola crisis. I'm Molly Page. Japan's prime minister says they are still working to free two hostages held by ISIS, and he calls a new online video discussing their fate outrageous and unforgivable. Will Ripley in Tokyo has more on the hostage the extremist group claims to have killed.
This is now on wall-to-wall coverage on all of the major Japanese networks, and what they are showing is a photo of the hostage, the freelance journalist Kenji Goto, holding up another photo, which appears to be, claims to be, the decapitated body of Haruna Yukawa, the Japanese man who was captured in August.
That post has now been deleted. Officials in Liberia said today that they are treating just five remaining cases of Ebola, confirming it is close to eradicating an epidemic which has left thousands dead. A top UN official says the tide is turning in Sierra Leone and Guinea as well. I'm Molly Page. The upcoming assault to retake Mosul from ISIS could include U.S. military advisors near the front lines. Bob Costantini has more on what would be a controversial change in policy.
Mosul, Iraq's second largest city, has been in ISIS's hands since June. A senior U.S. military official says top generals are ready to recommend that American advisors be on the front lines with Iraqi forces in their anticipated assault to take back Mosul. The decision would be President Obama's after his pledge of no combat operations and only airstrikes to hit the Islamic State. U.S. and international officials say despite the propaganda, ISIS is suffering heavy losses from the international response. Bob Costantini, Washington.
And it's 4 years in prison for a 19-year-old Colorado woman who admitted guilt in wanting to become an ISIS bride and participate in its jihad in the Mideast. A federal judge handed down the sentence to Shannon Maureen Connolly, who is now one of the first Americans to be sentenced for that crime. I'm Molly Page.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break, and at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-700-5961. That's 1-800-700-5961. Again, 1-800-700-5961. Call now.
Can you keep a secret? You may not have much company. Evan Haining reports Splash Data's annual list of the worst passwords is out.
The two at the top this year's list are password and 123456. But even tough-to-crack passwords are no good if you tell them to everybody. ABC TV's Jimmy Kimmel Show went out on the street to ask, what's your password?
It is my dog's name and the year I graduated from high school.
Oh, what kind of dog do you have?
I have a Chihuahua Papillon.
And what's his name?
Jameson.
Jameson. And where did you go to school?
I went to school back in Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
What school?
Hempfield Area Senior High School.
Oh, when did you graduate?
In 2009.
Oh, great.
The trick is your password should be secret. That's S-E-C-R-E-T. 123. I'm Evan Haining.
According to new research, smokers will see more than $1 million go up in smoke. That includes the cost of cigarettes, sick days, and the higher cost of health care over a lifetime. I'm Molly Page.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with a computerized wave ventilation unit. Wave ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins that are trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. Wave ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty or filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs.
I recently installed a unit and was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. Now, the smell is finally gone.
Say goodbye to your dehumidifier and get a Wave unit for your home.
For free information, go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home. AM 1300 WMEL.
From the WMEL Weather Center, here's your forecast for the rest of Saturday. Look for mostly sunny skies once this rain clears out. High near 70 degrees, still pretty windy with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, the wind dies down. We'll see mostly clear skies with a low around 43. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 65 and a low of 50. And on Monday, the wind kicks back up again, mostly sunny with a high near 70 degrees. Here, Ed Dean, weekday afternoons, 5 to 7 p.m. right here on AM 1300 WMEL.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. I'm Slaughter.
And I'm Lawson.
And our new show is called Mouthing Off, Saturdays at 3 p.m. On our sports talk show, we tackle hard-hitting sports topics on a local and national level. I'm Alan Slaughter.
And I'm Matt Lawson.
Talk to us Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL.
And worldwide at 1300WMEL.com.
AM 1300 WMEL.
The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Welcome to Bold Talk Business Radio. It's another great Saturday here from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and we have got some good stuff for you today. Bold Talk Business Radio is the place where you learn insights, strategies, tips, and tools for success, and we talk about various aspects of satisfaction and success and how you get there in your life and in your work. And today we've got a great show planned for you. We have Stephanie Leibowitz with more than 20 years of management experience in marketing and communications and more, and I'll tell you more about her in a minute. We're going to be talking about how to close more sales using business proposals. After that, we've got Dick Baumbach up from Baumbach & Fisher, and we're going to be talking about crisis communication. How do you manage when things are not going well and they really need you to talk effectively, clearly, and compassionately about whatever problem is happening in your business or your life? So we have a little feedback here in the headset here, so bear with me. And I wanted to let you know that next week we have a great show planned with an attorney from Miami, Richard Russell Weigel, and he's going to be talking about how to secure capital for your company and limit your risk of future litigation. Russell's going to be with us every month to talk about funding companies, and I think it's going to be a great segment on the last week of the month. So today I'd like to welcome Stephanie Leibowitz. And Stephanie, we got you on the line there?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Thanks for joining us today.
Very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, for our listeners, I'd like you to know that Stephanie, as I said earlier, has more than 20 years of management experience in marketing, communications, business development, contracting, healthcare administration, and more. And one of the things that she works really well at is developing marketing communication plans for startup corporations. She's also currently engaged in long-term employment with one of the nation's leading cosmetic companies. And I would thanks, Stephanie, for spending your time with us today, because I know on a weekend when you work so hard all week, it's a blessing to be able to give up some of your time, and I'm very grateful for that today. So one of the things Stephanie's done in her career is that she was co-founder of a company called Proposal Docs years ago that worked for organizations as diverse as, well, not Proposal Docs particularly, but Stephanie herself worked for organizations like Swiss Air, Gentiva Health Services, Olsten, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and she had a lot of experience during that time doing business-to-business sales proposals. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about how you can write and prepare a winning proposal. And sometimes proposals are done because there's a formal RFP, or request for proposal, that goes out for people to give a very formatted response. And sometimes you just want to send in your own proposal. There is a phone noise. And Stephanie, I'm going to ask if you have a speakerphone on, if you could.
No, I don't.
No, you don't. Okay. don't know what's going on here, and I'm going to ask our engineer to give me a tip if there's anything we can do to fix
that. Well, there's really nothing we can do here because it's in the phone line itself. She may want to call us back.
Yeah. Stephanie, could you give us a call back at area code 321? 631-1300, and we're going to try this again. And I am going to be on with our listeners getting through this little time and space. Thanks, Stephanie. So back to business. What we're going to talk about today, and I'm just going to start us along, is talking about some strategies for winning and preparing winning business proposals. To do a good business proposal that will set you apart from your competition, we need to have an understanding of the best practices for managing the proposal process and for writing a good proposal that really makes a difference. So today what we're going to do is we are going to talk about 10 essentials that you really should get your pen and paper and write down these tips, 10 things that will really help you build a top-notch proposal for your customer. Now, some of you who are out there who maybe haven't done this before or don't really understand what a proposal is, we're going to tell you about that. But basically, when you're going from one company to another company, we're talking specifically business to business, and you want to make a really good presentation, you want to make sure that what you're proposing to that company doesn't look like it came from everybody else. And I'll tell you how and why this topic is near and dear to my heart. Years ago, when I started my own consulting company, which is now Bold Marketing Solutions, based in Melbourne, but when I started that company on Long Island, I had a communications background and I had someone with a video company who called me up and asked me if I would give her a price to write a script for her video. And I gave her a price. And so she said, "That's great. No problem. I want to work with you." So a few weeks later, she called me back and she said, "Hey, I have this other job coming up and I'd like to know if you can give me a price." And I said, "Well, sure. And it's the same price that I gave you last time, but let me send it over to you." So I gave her another proposal. And then it happened again. And after the third time, I was like, "Wait, something's wrong here because I keep giving her my pricing and I know my proposal's good, but something isn't right because the jobs are never actually happening." And that's because she was going out and selling her video, the total production package, on her own. So when she called me a fourth time and said, "Hey, can you give me a price? I've got this really big account and this is like the once in a lifetime job," I said to her, "You know, I would be very happy to give you a price for this job, but we need to take a look at why the jobs that you're sending out, the proposals you're sending out, aren't closing. So I'll do the proposal for you if you'll guarantee me the work once we get it." So we made that agreement, and we sold an $83,000 project within a few weeks. So I'm really happy to say Stephanie is back on the line, and I am not hearing any feedback, very little at any rate. So Stephanie Leibowitz, thank you again for joining us. And
you're
what
welcome.
I was just telling our listeners is the rationale for why it's important to have the right proposal, because if you don't have the right proposal, you're probably not going to ever close that job. So Stephanie, if you could tell our listeners some of what you've gleaned over the years, what you've learned and what you've done that really have made for best practice proposal development, I think we could help people out there to sell more stuff.
Okay.
And keep the economy rolling.
One of the most important things you can do is really to show that you understand the buyer's industry, their needs and challenges. And I think to make it more personal, it's always a great idea to include information you've gleaned from conversations, whether you're meeting them face-to-face or by phone, because that gives it that extra little personal touch that people feel that you really listen to what they told you.
So what I hear you saying from that is that the more that a customer believes that you are familiar with them, not only with them and their company, but basically understand where they fit into their marketplace, the better chance you have of building a strong enough relationship that your proposal will stand out and you'll get the work.
Absolutely, which leads me to another tip, is that you're going to want to customize your proposal, and I would really suggest very strongly that you avoid boilerplate. your goal here really is to have the buyer say, that's just what I was looking for.
So explain to our listeners, what is a boilerplate?
Okay, a boilerplate is just standard language that you've created, and you just keep using over and over and over again, regardless of who you're proposing to.
Okay, so it's just, you know, down and dirty and no customization. Doesn't really speak. In other words, I think that this is really the clue here, that it doesn't really speak to what the customer needs, because if you're telling the same story over and over, it's just the story you want to tell and not really focused on maybe the custom needs or specific understanding of the customer.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that people should keep in mind is that however you behave and whatever you say and whatever you do during the whole proposal process is also a reflection of how they will perceive you will do business with them. So if you take the extra care and time to really give in a great proposal, the conclusion they're going to come to is beyond the proposal itself. It's going to say, you're going to be great at doing the job for me.
Right. And so when you take the time to tailor the proposal, it's showing also that you cared enough, you put the time in, you really did your diligence on their business. And in the end, then they say, well, that's exactly what I'm looking for, not only in the product or service that you're selling me, but the kind of person that I want to work with and who I want to manage this job for me.
Yes, and I think also it's important for people to keep in mind that they really should stick to the facts and the evidence, because this is what strengthens your proposal. People really can see through fluff and that you've just added, you know, extra pages in the proposal. And it's not the length of the proposal, it's what the value and the content of what you're putting in there that really counts.
So, you know, as a marketing person, one of the, you know, rules you learn early on is avoid the marketing fluff. And people have a tendency to think, oh, it's marketing, it's all fluff. So there are many ways that you cut through the fluff, both in marketing materials. And if you think about it, in a sales proposal, it's really one of your biggest marketing projections, you know, and marketing productions, because it's telling a company what you can do. What you can do for them. So it's a combination of sales and marketing. So when you're talking about evidence, Stephanie, instead of fluff, can you please give us a few examples of how that might work? Say I'm a business consultant, and I'm coming in and I know that you need some help with your business. Maybe your sales have been off, or maybe you're not getting enough telephone calls from your customers, or maybe you have a problem inside your company and people aren't getting along. Where does evidence fit in when you're coming in to sell a product or a service to someone? What kind of evidence are people looking for?
Sure. Well, I think it actually ties back a little bit to the first tip we talked about in terms of making sure you can demonstrate that you understand where people are coming from. And if you talk about how you've helped other clients, and, you know, you can maintain client confidentiality without giving specifics, but you could certainly talk about how you've helped a certain size company with a certain amount of, you know, net sales or revenue to do a particular thing, whether it's you help them, increase their sales by a certain percent or a dollar value. If it's employee-related, you can talk about maybe how you improve their retention rate for their employees, which certainly has a cost-benefit to it. So you really should put it in perspective of, like, how have you helped others who've had similar issues and challenges?
That's reminding me very much of what a case study is and what a case study does in talking to a customer, and you can actually point out what you did in a specific way. Can you talk a little bit about what goes into a case study?
Sure. It really only has three simple parts to it. It's basically a short statement of what was the problem or challenge, what you did to attack that problem and solve it, and what was the end result.
Right. And then people get a sense that people at the buying end can say, oh, So you were able to solve this problem in this way for this customer. Maybe that'll work for us. Or maybe that would work for us with a little tweak. And then you get the opportunity to talk about the tweak. And that's where you can begin to sell yourself on a relationship basis.
Yes, that's very true. And I think it also leads into the next piece, which is basically showing how you meet or exceed all the criteria against, you know, which you're going to be evaluated. And you really want to make it simple for people to choose you. And a really great tip that I used to use a lot and I had guided people on was to actually create a little table that you have in the front of your proposal that has two columns. And one would say, you know, what their criteria are that they're evaluating and they're looking for. And then the other column is just short little bullet points on how you actually meet them. And you're actually helping to create a scorecard for them.
Well, I know from working with you in the past, we had a really nice format for the issue that you're working on, the solution that you're proposing, and then the impact that it had for your customers.
Yes, that works very well. And actually, you know, you very often will get feedback from these, you know, prospects to say that they've never seen anything like that and that it made it very clear to them.
Right. So some of the things that I'm thinking about as you're talking about how a case study might work and why a proposal is a good idea is what a proposal is not. And I know we've talked about that in the past, that a proposal is not a brochure. It's not just a list of your products and services, and it's not a boilerplate, as you had mentioned before. And how do you keep a proposal from being a one-way presentation?
Well, I think that's where the conversations with the prospect really come in. You know, unless it's a formal request for proposal process where they don't allow conversation, which is rare. Usually that's on the government side. But B2B is usually some discussion that is allowed. And when you meet with your prospect, you know, you should have some specific questions so that you can get some really solid information about them, about where their challenges are and what they would like to see happen, what hasn't happened before that they wish had. And you can then take that information to make your proposal more specific for
mm-hmm.
them.
And very often, when you're doing a proposal, you're already in conversation with people. You already know a little bit about what it is that they need. You already have a little bit of a sense, maybe, hopefully, of how they make decisions. So you're kind of extending a dialogue that you've begun on a more rigorous and more rigid structured proposal. Sometimes you don't have the opportunity to talk too much ahead of the time with the customer. Sometimes a proposal is let. They limit their conversation with vendors, and then they won't talk to you until maybe you're a finalist.
That's true, but one of the ways that you can, I guess, counter that is, and you should be doing it anyway, even when they allow a lot of conversation, is to, on your own, do a lot of research in general, whether it's online or through a library, wherever you can, to find out as much as possible about the industry. As an industry, what are the challenges out there? And then within that particular geographic marketplace, because chances are, whatever their specific problems are, they're also facing these general ones. And it gives you a perspective and a jumping off point.
Right. And that makes me think a little bit about positioning. It really comes down to positioning, how you're going to deliver what your customer wants, and deciding on kind of the theme that you're going to use. Is that right? Like, should you have a theme for your presentation?
Well, I think you should. You know, proposals are, they're really stories. And the customer has, your prospective customer has a story that it tells this customer. And you want to be able to tell your story, but in a way that's focused on them. And the theme really should be based on what are the things happening at the company. I mean, if their greatest challenge is, you know, geographic reach in their markets or something like that, you know, and if you can place resources in every place where they need something, you know, then geographic reach becomes your particular theme. Maybe it's about availability of service. They don't, you know, they need a certain number of resources at their disposal. So it just, you have to take the cues basically from what you're hearing at the prospect.
All right. So when you're doing your proposal, then you want to be able to show your capabilities for how you're going to solve a problem. Your actual ability of your company, what's at your disposal to use, in other words, in solving problems for them or in providing specific products. Then you want to talk also, I guess, about how you're going to implement, particularly when it's a service. Sometimes you're just selling widgets, and it's a matter of how you're going to handle fulfillment maybe for them. But other times, particularly in service implementation, it can be more convoluted. And you've got how this whole new project you're going to do is going to roll out.
Yes, and I think, you know, the challenge with a service is there are tangible and intangible things that you bring to a customer relationship. And the tangible things are easier to document. The intangible things, you still have to talk about them, but you have to try to create a way for them to think about it in a tangible way.
Okay.
So we tell people that you can't talk about providing excellent service because everybody says that. Is how do you define excellent service? What concrete things do you do or will you do for them that they will equate with excellent service?
Okay, we're going to have a hard break in a few minutes, actually less than a minute. I'm sorry, we've got 2 minutes, they just informed me. So that's great. So we've got 2 minutes left with Stephanie Leibowitz, proposal consultant and marketing and management consultant. So, Stephanie, what are the last few things you'd like our listeners to know? We talked about 10 tips mm-hmm. for proposals.
Well, I would say the very last thing then is to just make sure that it has a professional look to it. Use a lot of visuals, any way that you think you can add some punch to it. And please proofread everything for spelling and grammar and things like that, because it really does count.
That's great advice, because, you know, people, particularly, for instance, I'm in marketing, but if I was a marketing consultant and I had a website that had grammatical errors in it, it wouldn't make me look very good. So hopefully there are no grammatical errors on my website, which is boldmarketingsolutions.com. Stephanie, do you have a website that you'd like someone to contact?
No, actually, I don't.
Oh, okay, well, if anyone here wants to get in touch with Stephanie Leibowitz, I'm going to invite you to fill out a form on boldmarketingsolutions.com. Or if you have more questions about proposal development, Stephanie and I have worked together in the past and done business-to-business proposals for a lot of companies. So if you want to connect with me, just go to boldmarketingsolutions.com and look for that. A couple of parting things is to let the buyer know how you've helped other people in the past. We talked about that. Think about how you're going to differentiate, why they should specifically choose you over someone else. And to do that, you can use that issue solution impact checklist that we talked about earlier. And in the end, don't be shy about mentioning how you meet additional criteria that company might need and how you can basically meet and exceed all the criteria for a business-to-business proposal. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Dick Baumbach, and we're going to be talking about crisis communication. We're going to talk about public relations. What happens when something goes wrong in your company? Think back to the Tylenol scare. Think to what has happened with some of the auto dealers, and when a car has to be recalled, how does a company manage that? So stay with us. Come back after the news to hear about crisis communication.
AM 1300 WMEL.
From the WMEL Weather Center, here's your forecast. As this rain clears out from this morning, look for mostly sunny skies and a high near 70 degrees. Very windy, gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, not as windy, low around 43. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 65 and a low of 50. And on Monday, the wind kicks back up again. Mostly sunny skies with a high near 70. Here, Dave Ramsey, weekday afternoons, 2 to 5 p.m. right here on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL.
Hello, Space Coasts. This is Mark Allen, host of Late Night Health, midnight to 2 a.m. on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL. Each weekend, hear the latest on health-related matters designed with the baby boomer in mind. From heart disease and diets to diabetic issues to obesity, Late Night Health is great company overnight. Make a date with me, Mark Allen. It's Late Night Health, Sunday mornings, midnight to 2 a.m. on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL, and worldwide at 1300WMEL.com.
AM 1300 WMEL.
The authenticity of an online message announcing the death of a Japanese hostage is being called into question. The posting claims that one of two Japanese prisoners held by ISIS has been killed, but the post was deleted quickly. Correspondent Aaron McPike has a statement from U.S. National Security spokesperson Patrick Ventrell.
The intelligence community is working to confirm its authenticity. The United States strongly condemns ISIL's actions, and we call for the immediate release of all the remaining hostages. The United States is fully supportive of Japan in this matter, and we stand in solidarity with Japan.
If you didn't use your ice scraper this weekend, you may need it come Monday morning.
The next round of wintry weather comes from an Alberta clipper, which should reach the upper Midwest tonight. Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philly, and New York City will see snow from this system for the start of the work week Monday morning. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
The price at the pump drops another penny overnight. The national average now $2.04 a gallon. Lowest price in the country, Missouri, $1.79. I'm Molly Page.
From the WMEL Weather Center, here's your forecast. As this rain clears out from this morning, look for mostly sunny skies and a high near 70 degrees. Very windy, gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, not as windy, low around 43. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 65 and a low of 50. And on Monday, the wind kicks back up again, mostly sunny skies with a high near 70. Here, Dave Ramsey, weekday afternoons, 2 to 5 p.m. right here on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL.
Health First Health Plans presents Understanding Medicare.
When you turn 65 and are eligible for Medicare, you're faced with many questions about your health insurance options, and you're not alone. In today's Understanding Medicare, we're going to answer a question you may have about Medicare. What are Medicare Advantage plans?
A Medicare Advantage plan provides comprehensive health plan options through a private insurance company that has a contract with Medicare. Medicare Advantage plans offer all the coverage of original Medicare plus extra benefits like gym memberships.
Understanding Medicare, presented by Health First Health Plans.
WMEL 1300 Cocoa Beach, Melbourne, Palm Bay. Nominated Business of the Year by the Cocoa Beach Regional Chamber of Commerce.
Orlando clarinetist Silafata and his quartet bring straight-ahead jazz in a live concert Sunday, February 8th, 2 p.m. at the Cocoa Beach Country Club. Silafata is compared to Benny Goodman on the clarinet. Backup musicians are Ron Pertle on bass, Rich Abrahams on piano, and Stan Siloco on drums. Tickets are $10 for Jazz Society members, $15 for non-members, and may be purchased at the door. For more details, log on to spacecoastjazzsociety.org. I'm Bobby Vance with the Space Coast Jazz Society, and we're glad that WMEL cares about the space and Treasure Coast.
Glorious, fresh powder.
A snowy, wintry bounty from the sky above.
That's Timberline Resort, located in wild, wonderful West Virginia.
It's heaven, and it's so close, you're almost there.
Step out of Timberline Hotel and Suites and hop right on a lift.
Stargaze while you night ski on the White Lightning Trail.
Experience glade skiing adventure
on freshly powdered tree-lined trails.
Call 1-800-SNOWING.
Or log on to TimberlineResort.com.
It's like heaven.
You're almost there.
Your home for Orlando Magic basketball is AM 1300 WMEL.
Fast break coming the other way. Aaron Gordon to the top. Skywalk into the rim. He'll ram it down.
The Magic are back home to host Roy Hibbert and the Indiana Pacers. Dennis Newman and Richie Adubato will have the coverage Sunday from Amway Center, starting with the pregame show at 5:30, followed by the tip-off at 6. On your home for the Magic for 23 years on the Space Coast, AM 1300 WMEL.
AM 1300 WMEL.
This is Bull Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bull's Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
And this
is Donna Anselmo coming back to you live on AM 1300 WMEL, the Talk to Me station. And Bold Talk Business Radio is the place you want to be for insight, strategies, tips, and tools for success and lifestyle satisfaction on a Saturday afternoon. And you can use them all week, all month, and all year. Use them for years. It's on me. So it's also on my guest that's coming up in the next segment today, who is Dick Baumbach, a great friend of WMEL Radio. You hear him here very often on Friday afternoons as well. But Dick and his company specialize in marketing, public relations, crisis communication. And so when the unexpected happens and it could have negative impact on a company or even an individual's reputation, what do you do? And that's why we're talking to Dick today, because he knows the answer. Dick Baumbach, thank you for joining me today. Okay. He was there. Okay, and I guess he'll be back. One way or another, I'm going to leave that to our friendly engineer, Wayne West, and I see our station owner, John Harper, in the engineering room, and they're going to pull this together for us and get him back on the line so that I can hear him and you can hear him too. So what happens when things go wrong?
You know,
I'm glad you're back, Dick.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Well, actually, Dick and I go back a long way, across state lines, and we didn't even know it, but we discovered it when we were in Melbourne, right, Dick?
That's correct. I mean, we have our roots back on Long Island.
Not only on Long Island, but we attended the same parish at St. Aidan's.
Yes. I mean, it still gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, and we discovered that sitting next to each other at a networking meeting at the Tuscany Grill. Go figure. But today, what we wanted to talk with you about, Dick, is crisis communication. So when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, and you're obviously never expecting this to happen, at least usually people aren't planned for a crisis, but you can plan for a crisis in advance. People just don't expect them to happen. So let's talk a little bit about what you bring to the table and how you advise people when things go wrong and they cause a potential storm, or that storm is brewing or has already overtaken a company.
Well, the big thing is that realizing with a crisis that decisions are going to have to be made under pressure and in the heat of the moment. And those decisions that you make will impact your business for years to come. People have to realize that.
So that's a really interesting point, because it talks to not only about communicating, but really about how somebody makes a good decision in the moment when they're under tremendous stress.
That, absolutely. And it's one of the big things, Donna, and you know this so well, is that when you have a situation, you tell it all. You tell it fast, and you tell the truth.
Right. And you know, it's a curious thing, and just popped into my mind again, is I got a job because of a crisis situation for the State University of New York. And I was a former journalist, and Stony Brook University had invited me in for an interview. So I was scheduled for this 8 a.m. interview. And in the meantime, a story broke the night before. And the story that broke was that one of the doctors who was on staff at the Long Island State Veterans Home, which was under the auspices of the university hospital I was at Stony Brook, where I was interviewing, they had just broken the story the night before that one of the physicians was convicted, or not convicted, was arrested for murdering patients. And so now you have a hospital with a psychiatrist on staff, I believe it was a doctor of psychiatry, who had evidently killed four patients. What do you do? And that was my interview question. How do you handle this? So I came from a news media background and had the, you know, kind of the eye of the journalist on this. But today I'm interested in hearing your take on situations like that.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, how we have gotten to know each other. It's, you know, doing the simple things. It's not ignoring the situation. And it's remembering that people remember what they hear first and what they hear last. And it's that first impression now of how you're going to handle the situation. And if you are a business, it's not having you as the business owner or the senior executive talking to the media about the crisis, but having a third party. That way you're protected, and the media at some point can get to you on a news conference that's set up at an established time. I mean, that's really
so. So there are two thoughts streaming through my head as you're saying this. One is about first impressions, which I'm going to come back to. And the second one, which you're really speaking to at the moment, is controlling the conversation. And we see that happen all the time when we watch the news, particularly when we hear government talking.
Absolutely. And it's trying. And again, you're not manipulating the media. What you're doing is you're giving them the information they're looking for, but you're telling them that information as much as you can. An example that I always share is when I worked for the governor in Tennessee, one of the departments I was responsible for was the Department of Correction. And one time we had a prison riot, and the inmates started to burn down the prison. Well, I got there, and there were probably 35 journalists there, and they said, "What's happening?" And I said, "The prison's burning." And they said, "Okay, that's right. Okay, thank you."
Well, that's calling it like it is.
Well, you know, what are you going to say? Oh, I can't tell you why the flames are behind us?
Right. But, you know, sometimes there are other things at stake, such as how the public, a customer, the other employees in a company are wondering about what's going on and how they're going to be impacted by it. So how do you manage that?
Well, that's the thing. It's talking to the employees and the people before a crisis and telling them if there is a situation that occurs at say, a major department store, that the employees defer any media to a spokesperson. They don't say, "Oh, well, I saw this happening, I saw that happening." They defer to the spokesperson, so the spokesperson can then give the message honestly and truthfully about what has occurred.
That's right, because the impact of the situation could be either positive or negative, depending on how you speak about it when it happens.
Right, and like you and I both know how many times, and another very good example, Donna, is, do you remember Florida Air? They used to fly from Florida up to upstate or New York area.
Mm-hmm.
They went out of business just because of all of this. One of their planes back in the early 90s crashed into the Potomac River in Washington. And the PR person for the company was in Miami. She said, "I need to get up there right away." They said, "No, we'll have our attorneys handle it." Well, they had four attorneys telling four different stories. 1 year later, Florida Air was out of business.
Right. And I think that also speaks to something I said I was going to get back to that you had brought up, was about first impression and image. Because in that case that you're talking about now, you're hearing different stories, so you don't know what to believe. But when you're planning in advance to avert a crisis that you don't even know is ever going to happen, when you can plan and do something really important, which is build trust by being honest and being reliable with your public to begin with, so that if something goes wrong, they already have a really good sense of who you are and a belief that you'll probably correct that problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, another thing is that people who are in the situations like this, if they're not using an outside source on behalf of their company, they need to confirm the obvious. They need to speak with compassion and express empathy for whatever has occurred. And the biggest thing is it's no longer if a crisis is going to happen, it's when it's going to happen.
All right. You just assume the inevitable. Murphy's Law is in operation, right? We're talking with Dick Baumbach, founder of Baumbach & Fisher, and we're talking today about crisis management, which really ties in with public relations, and we're listening, or you're listening, to AM 1300 WMEL, and this show is Bold Talk Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Anselmo. So, Dick, tell us a little bit about the different types of audiences that people need to be prepared to communicate with when a crisis goes wrong. Because some, you know, a lot of times the first thing you think of is the media. But let's talk about some of the different audiences in the community, you know, people who are affected.
Well, and you brought it up a little bit ago, and that is it's the customers, it's the employees, it's the families of those people. It's the general public, not just the media, because those people, what they hear first, they're going to keep in their heads. And if they don't, if they hear four or five different stories, like you said, they're going to say something's wrong here.
So if and when a crisis occurs, what I think you're probably saying is that you want to have you might need to have multiple people talking. I mean, sometimes that happens and you can't have all the conversation come out of one person. But if you're going to have multiple people talking, they all have to talk the same story, the same truth, but maybe worded so that it can be understood based on the impact it has on the different audiences.
Right, absolutely. And you know, one of the best examples that you and I always give to people is if you think of how Tylenol handled their crisis.
What was that, 1987?
Yeah, exactly. Right. When they came out, mm-hmm. there were two people who came out, spoke, and said, we're taking everything off the shelves. We're going to take care of this right now. And to this day, you go in, you still buy Tylenol.
Yeah, and that was one of my first ethics studies when I was doing my master's in was in healthcare policy and management. So Tylenol was a big issue at the time.
But the way they handled it, mm-hmm. versus, you know, some of the oil companies who said, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be fine.
Right. And, you know, that's really interesting, because when you hear that, don't worry, it'll be fine kind of an answer, we're going to gloss over it, and somehow, you know, Camelot's going to come about again. It really just makes people not trust the message, and not trust the deliverer of the message either. So what Tylenol did so skillfully was they admitted to the problem, they came up with a correction plan, and they worked hard not to do it again. And that was what I was talking about, the incident when I interviewed for a job on a day that a doctor at this hospital system was accused and arrested for murder. And the thing that I said, because I was the journalist who would be interviewing them, because I was still at the journalism job, who would have to interview a story like that, and I would want to know, well, what are you going to do about this, and how did it happen? And so the answer to that was to say to the public and to the media and to their employees, you know what? We're going to make sure this never happens again, because we're going to change our human resource process. We're going to change how we screen people. We're going to do better background checking. And the more specifics that you can provide, the easier it's going to be for people to believe that you're going to do something to fix it.
Absolutely. That is absolutely correct. And the other thing, Donna, is that people need to have, especially if they have, and it doesn't have to be a 500 or 5,000 employee company. It can be a company with 5 or 10 employees, but they need to have a plan in place or have one developed that they know what they're going to do if such a situation arises.
Right.
An example is what happened several months ago on Merritt Island. I don't know if you remember when the gentleman was a tree trimmer, a young guy, and he was killed.
No, and, unfortunately, I didn't hear that story.
And well, he was killed because the tree fell on him.
Oh, I did hear that story.
And the media jumped on it, and the owner of the company said, well, you know, we have no comment about that. Well, what happened, I found out about a week ago, the guy doesn't get any business anymore.
Right. And, you know, I mean, that's a favorite phrase. And we're going to have a lawyer on with us next week who specializes in securities law, and that's Russell Weigel from Miami. But many lawyers tell their clients, don't comment, never comment. And what you're saying with the mindset of the communicator is we need to comment, but we need to comment thoughtfully.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Right. And that's a terrible situation, obviously, what happened when a young man is killed while trimming a tree. But you have other situations that can be business traumatic without necessarily having a bad PR spin, such as, what do you do in a crisis when maybe there's a hurricane and your business goes down? That also calls for some pre-planning, like having a business continuity plan where all of your documented procedures are in place and who should be notified when and how you're going to communicate and what media you're going to talk to in the case of a crisis like that. How are you going to get the word out about how you solve a problem when business goes down?
Exactly. And you need those people that you work with and that work for you, that they know what happened, what you're doing to correct it, and how long it's going to take to correct it. Because they, again, are going to go to their people and say, well, they don't know what they're doing. Or, gee, we've got this under control.
Right. And you know what? It's making me think, as you're talking, Dick Baumbach on WMEL AM 1300, and this is Bull Talk Business Radio with Donna Anselmo. What I'm thinking about here is the many stakeholders that are involved. So we talked a little bit before, we mentioned customers, but you also have investors in businesses. And when things happen that shouldn't, and people start thinking about how is this going to affect my pocketbook, that in itself is a crisis. And you have to really know how to speak with care, with thought, with facts, and you know, and as I talked about earlier, segmenting. What do you tell to whom, and how do you do that?
Well, you really, if you have a plan, and you have that plan is there, and it's part of your brain wave, you are able to make those decisions. And simply the thing saying, we are looking into the matter. We take this situation seriously. And we are attempting to help everybody involved. As you know, because you're a former journalist like I am, the media will accept that. And they will put that out for the general public to see, to say, oh, they're really trying to help themselves and also help us move on from this thing.
Right. And what about the news media? Because, you know, I'm a former print journalist. I mean, here I am as a broadcast journalist today. But as a print journalist, we are trained to look behind the scenes, you know, to peel away the layers, to find the source of the conflict, to, I don't want to say sensationalize the news, because I was never trained that way, although the news is pretty sensationally delivered today, to become news entertainment. So when that happens, and you are talking not to your employee and maybe not to a customer, but to the media, who has the ability to have a huge slanting impact on your story, how do you recommend addressing the media? Do you do
like I said earlier, you tell it all, you tell it truthfully, and you give them the information that you can give them at that point. And as you know, if you say, here's what I can give you right now, we will meet again in 3 hours, and I will give you an update.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Along with the police chief and the fire chief or whatever, the media will say, fine, we'll see you in 3 hours.
Right. So what do you think your first priority in dealing with a crisis should be?
It's
in the communication end of it.
It's assessing the situation, but it's really, and I've seen this over and over again, it's having some type of plan in effect that your secretary knows about, that your senior executives know about and are aware of and know what to do, so that whatever the size of your company, you come out of the situation want a positive spin versus a negative.
Right. So the first thing that you're saying, your priority, if a bad event occurs, in the event of a bad situation, you're going to first put a plan in place and pull the right people together who will share the right story.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. So talk a little bit about public relations in general and why reputation management is so important.
Well, it really, because that is what makes your bread and butter and what makes a company's bread and butter. And if a company is forthright and honest and positions itself with a good public relations plan, different than a crisis plan, as you well know, people, companies can explode, can keep going, getting bigger, etc. I mean, one of the things that people probably don't realize is that both
Did we lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
One of the things people don't realize is that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs were very good at public relations. They just weren't the, you know, computer engineers sitting in the background. They reached out. They talked to people. And when they did that, people accepted their ideas and said, let's move forward.
Well, there's that story about people liking to do business with people they know and trust. And it's really hard to get to know and trust somebody who doesn't talk very much.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So for getting a good story out, a positive story, or telling a story in a right way, do you have any tips for our listening public today?
Sure. They need to talk to Don Anselmo or Dick Baumbach.
Here we are at your service.
And we can help them.
That's a very astute commentary. But actually, what I'm thinking about is, if you want to make a good story for yourself, create a good foundation for your business to begin with and do things in the right way. I would say check your values, right?
Absolutely. You and I both know over the years, locally, wherever, people who have taken advantage of people, that gets around. People talk about that. And then people say, well, why did my business go away? Because you got a bad reputation and you didn't do anything about it to make it a good reputation. Look at the reputation of WMEL. And that has been around for over 20 years. People see it as the number one talk radio station in this area.
Yes, voted in Hometown News Best Local Talk Radio Station.
Right.
All right, so you're listening to AM 1300 WMEL, and we have about a half a minute left. So, Dick Baumbach and Fisher, why don't you let our listeners know how they can reach you?
Sure. They can either call me directly at 321-544-3440 or go to info@bnfcommunications.com and be more than happy to talk.
Thank you for listening with us today. This is Donna Anselmo at AM 1300 WMEL, Bold Talk Business Radio. Come back next week to hear about raising capital for your company.
From the WMEL Weather Center, here's your forecast for the rest of Saturday. Look for mostly sunny skies once this rain clears out. High near 70 degrees, still pretty windy with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, the wind dies down. We'll see mostly clear skies with a low around 43. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 65 and a low of 50. And on Monday, the wind kicks back up again, mostly sunny with a high near 70 degrees. Hear Ed Dean, weekday afternoons, 5 to 7 p.m., right here on AM 1300 WMEL.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. I'm Slaughter.
And I'm Lawson.
And our new show is called Mouthing Off, Saturdays at 3 p.m. On our sports talk show, we tackle hard-hitting sports topics on a local and national level. I'm Alan Slaughter.
And I'm Matt Lawson.
Talk to us Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL.
And worldwide at 1300WMEL.com.
WMEL, Cocoa Beach, Melbourne.
It's 3 o'clock.